Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Tuesday morning to you. MD and Fat Tony here with you, as we said, live at the Florida Blue practice fields. Tony, I think people maybe a little bit today scared off because the threat of rain, not as packed right now, but man, they're missing out.
I think it's just a Tuesday.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think so.
Man, they're out here on Thursdays and Fridays. I don't know, man. It's just, to me, they're missing out on what is by far the coolest start to a practice the Jags have had.
There's no doubt this is the coolest start. It's probably the most humid start we've had to the beginning of a practice. There's no doubt about that. I think humidity out here right now is somewhere in the high 80s this morning, but the temperature is much cooler, so feels pretty good out here, at least for right now. And we'll see what it looks like with the pads coming on today. Obviously, a lot of excitement out here among the players. There's a different energy when the pads go on. Heck, you could feel it Sunday night just when they went to a red zone, just how different the energy is with different periods in practice. You know, you do 11 on 11 every day. It's not every day in practice the coach lets you go head-to-head in the red zone or goal line, that kind of thing. You feel the intensity ratchet up, and today is one of those days when the pads go on that you feel that same kind of thing, as the energy level is high for this Jaguars team getting ready today.
Yeah, you know, we talk about, you know, defensive backs and wide receivers. Sure, there's some physical play with those guys, no doubt, but you see a lot of what you're going to see out of them over the course of the summer, whether it's OTAs, mini camps, what have you. Even in 7-on-7 drills, you're getting a large majority, a picture of what they're going to do for you. But, you know, certain position groups, certainly the line of scrimmage. I want to see Chris Ivory, you know, get some opportunities in short yardage. This is why you brought this guy in, to be a physical presence in your backfield, a tone setter for this football team that wants to run the ball and has not been able to dictate that at any point during the Gus Bradley regime here in Jacksonville. Will that change in year four? You're going to get your first glimpse of that today.
No doubt, and I wonder with the pads going on for the first time today. Look, they're not going to run Oklahoma drills or anything like that, like Jack made the mistake of doing, you know, when he was here. As much fun as that was for all the fans to watch that kind of thing, I'm sure there'll be a one-on-one period today where we'll be able to watch Jalen Ramsey as he walks in right now to the practice field in pads for the first time for the Jaguars.
He still does. Looks fast.
As we'll probably be able to see him go one-on-one with Allen Robinson again today, but the offensive and defensive line, that's when that ratchets up. I do wonder if they had red zone the other night. I wonder if they do their first real goal line work at some point today in practice. It's certainly going to happen sometime in the next couple of days, and that's when I think we really get that first opportunity to see how effective Chris Ivory is early on for this team doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, he's near the top of the list. Certainly, I mean, all those guys, as we mentioned, on the offensive and defensive lines, but particularly continuing watching the competition on the left side of the offensive line with Joko and Beecham and how that plays out. You want to see how a guy like Miles Jack takes to it. Can he get to the point here in the next couple weeks where he starts to play a little bit more instinctively? It's going to be a process all throughout his rookie season, but right now looks like he's still trying to kind of think his way through every play. What am I supposed to be doing? Where am I supposed to be? And it hasn't come second nature yet. Once it does, and he can just use his athleticism, I think that he's a guy you're going to want to watch, see if he can shed blocks, run to the football, and show off those skills that he had as a UCLA Bruin. So it's full pads for the first time for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and they'll be popping out there today. And, yes, the number one thing is the same every single day. Keep them healthy, right? at least keep the important ones healthy. Easy to say. If I'm number 87 on the roster, I still think I'm important. But you know what I'm talking about. The key guys on this football team, they don't need any setbacks. Today, John Osier is going to join us from Jaguars.com. I want to find out, not only from him, but the others who attended yesterday the unveiling of the U.S. Assure Clubs, exactly what fans are in store for this year. I don't know if we're going to be able to describe it adequately. I think it's one of those things you almost have to see. And so we'll talk to John Osier about that and other things as the Jags just a few days away from scrimmaging at Everbank
this Friday night.
And Mike Kay is going to join us from First Coast News coming up at 10:35. Very popular follow on social media. He may be the king of the Jaguar vine. Is that fair to say?
He puts them out. There's no doubt about it. He puts them out. He's the one who put up the one that everyone's been watching for the last several days from Saturday's practice with A-Rob and Jalen going one-on-one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, Mike is a popular follow and a good reporter, so he'll be joining us at 10:35. Hopefully we'll catch up with Frank Frangie, voice of the Jags, in the second hour today for the first time, at least during training camp 2016. We'll also hear a little bit from Mark Lamping, the president of the Jaguars, who unveiled yesterday all the goodies with the U.S. Ashore Club as the stadium continues to work its way towards the front of the line in terms of state-of-the-art amenities around the National Football League. It's not going to be a brand-new stadium, but it's got that feeling. If you hadn't gone to Everbank or this stadium, whatever you want to call it at any period of time, say in 5 years, Tony, mm-hmm. and you walked in for the first game of the 2016 season, I think people would be blown away.
I think they would, yeah. Just the difference that, and again, it's, we talked about this a little bit last week when we got out here on Thursday, I believe, but it's pretty clear that Shot Khan has no concern about whether or not the city's going to get a Super Bowl again. I know we hear about that from fans from time to time, but it's not a priority for Shot Khan, and what has been a priority is upgrading the game day experience for fans. And, look, that should be a priority across the league, where it's become more and more enticing to stay home, sit on your couch, watch the HD TV instead of heading out to your stadium for whatever NFL city you happen to be in. And everyone's fighting that battle across the league right now. You got to figure out a way to get people to come and experience something that they just flat out can't, you know, from their home. And Jacksonville has done a fantastic job of that with the boards coming in and now these new club seats coming in, which everything that you heard about them sounds absolutely spectacular. So, yeah, I mean, they're doing a fantastic job without having to renovate the whole thing and the city having to pay a, you know, $500 million bill. They have found a way to drastically improve the game day experience here for the
Jags.
And
that's the thing. You know, Shot has worked with the city. City's worked with Shot Khan and the Jaguars, and it's mutually beneficial. The Super Bowl right now, to me, is a one-sided affair. It would benefit the city if another Super Bowl came in. I don't see the direct benefit. Sure, you could argue that, hey, you show off Jacksonville in the stadium in a good light, that's going to make it more attractive to free agents. Well, I think the you get a guy to visit and see, right, and you know, or play in the stadium, they're going to see what it's all about.
Well, I go to the Super Bowl with you every year. It's not like when I was in San Francisco, I was like, wow, the 49ers. Like, that thought never went through my head.
Right.
Right? It's like, I don't care.
Although their stadium is sweet.
The stadium may be sweet. Right. The stadium may be
sweet.
Awesome. But the thought about the actual team of the city that you're in isn't really, you know,
well, you're right,
part of the conversation.
Nobody's talking about
there.
The home team when you're there for
no,
that week.
Right. No.
So, regardless, we got a lot cooking this morning. Glad you're with us. If you want to get in today, 641-1010. As we typically do on these training camp shows, we won't take a lot of calls, but we will check the text line heavily, which is driven by Duval Ford at that same number, 641-1010. Question of the day, which we posed to Dan Hicken. Now that the Jags are in full pads, who are you most looking forward to seeing? Which guy, in other words, a guy whose physicality is a big part of his football game, how's he going to either hold up or how's he going to be able to express his power on the field during these full contact, full padded practices? Chris Ivory may top the list for me, but there are a number of candidates. So share yours with us on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, or any other means, carrier pigeon or otherwise, that you see fit to get our attention with. John Osier coming up, the senior writer from Jaguars.com. Got a full day for you. Hope you're going to sit back and enjoy. Hopefully you're making your way out here to take advantage of, yes, a little bit of humidity, maybe a lot of bit, but not quite as oppressive with the temperatures out here today. We'll see if that holds up or if this cloud cover burns off and we're back to our typical sweaty cells by the end of a two-hour period. It's all coming up. Jaguars Today right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars Today live here on a Tuesday morning at the Florida Blue practice fields. First day in full pads for the Jacksonville Jaguars for the 2016 season as we get rolling here through week two of training camp. Not really a full week in yet, but nonetheless, week number two. And got the Hall of Fame game this weekend, Tony, and then the Jags will be starting up the preseason less than 2 weeks from now. We've got the senior writer from Jaguars.com, Mr. Johnny O, with us. Hi, John Osier. How are you?
It feels like we're a weekend. We may as well be a weekend. Let's call it
that's
a week.
We'll call it a week.
Yeah, that's fine.
If you're happy with that, we'll call
Once
it a week.
Once pads go on, that first week is kind of over. You know, you had
the preliminaries are done.
And it, this realistically, really shoulder pads enabled them to do a lot more than non-pads. I mean, when they were going full in the one-on-one pass rush drills last week, that's not going to look that much different today. So you got a chance to see the defensive line. You got a chance to see Malik Jackson and Dante Fowler and those guys. But, yeah, full is a little better than part.
A little bit. You know, and even in team, you
if
saw
– they fall, their knees are okay today.
Gotcha. Even in team drills, though, you saw a lot of contact on the line of scrimmage and things like that. But I think there's a mindset when you come out and you say, all right, it's full pads time. This is more – this is not just preparation. This is football to these guys.
Yeah, and again, they were really excited and you know, Dante Fowler and those guys felt good after that padded workout on Saturday. Dante in particular was really ready to be, you know, to get out there. He felt like he showed something. But certainly once he starts doing it in full regalia today, I'm sure he'll feel a lot better.
He probably will. And as he said, we talked with Dan Hicken at the top of the show, he says he still doesn't think he's got all of his explosiveness back.
Right.
Not that he's not healthy,
right,
but that there's more that he can get out of himself, which is very encouraging because you were here Saturday. You saw Dante Fowler. Dante was dominant at times, I thought, in some of those drills. And really, you know, you don't even think about the knee when you see him out there right now.
And that's the most important thing. I mean, anybody who's followed the NFL – has heard this before, but the most important thing, especially at the age that Dante is, meaning that 21 to 26-year-old guy who tears an ACL, all odds, all chances are that the knee is fine, especially considering he's been, 15 months out.
Right.
But there is still that they've never had their body not be there for them before, and now for 15 months there's been a little bit of a doubt. So that feeling of getting back out there and total trust, total I'm not thinking about it on any play, you know, I there's no way to know if Dante is really through that. There's no way to know if anybody's really through that, because only they can know. But I'm sure that's what Dante meant by there's still a little bit more out there, and there's still a little bit more in terms of, he said it, he's only 21 years old.
Right.
He's going to get better, bigger, possibly quicker off the knee. So if he's better than what he's looked so far, it's good.
Yeah, and Dante, one of those new faces on defense we've been talking about for months now with these Jags, with what they did in free agency and then into the draft. And I know me personally, I've been really impressed with the strides it looks like this defense has taken just early on in training camp, and how different it looks and how different it feels, especially going up against what is a really good offense in this league.
Well, and I've said all offseason, I'm still more curious somehow about what the offense is going to wind up doing, because the offense, I think, has a tougher task to improve on where they were and get to where they need to go, or tougher strides than what they did last year. I have no doubt the defense is going to be better. I don't think it's going to be at its full potential, because I think that happens next year once these guys all play together, once Fowler, Jack, and Ramsey become NFL veterans. So I don't have any doubt that the defense is going to be better on third down. It's going to be better than what it was, but I have reasonable expectations for that improvement. I don't think it's going to be top 10, but I think it can easily get into that top 20, top 15, and be better enough to make this team better. So to me, it's still the offense that has to take those winning championship steps, if you will, and be more efficient. But for fans who watched this defense last year just not be able to compete on third down, where third and eight was not a good situation for the defense, that can't be in this league. And I don't see any way in the world that that's not changed this year. But it's going to be a joy for fans to watch if indeed they're getting pressure on third down. If Matt Ryan doesn't have 7 seconds to throw and pick up third and eight time and time again, which I thought was the game that really defined this team last year, I don't think there's anyone in the world that won't be changed.
Yeah, let's hope they don't allow quarterback Phillip Rivers' capabilities to run for 12 yards on a key third down either. Yeah,
and I guess we joke a little bit, but it's easy as you get further away from last season to sort of forget the moments that defined it. And that was the moment that defined it. And that Atlanta game was the moment that defined it, where for all the other stuff that wasn't right, if they could have gotten off the field on 25% more of their third and seven and longs, if they had just felt like that wasn't a disadvantage down, which it's not supposed to be.
It's supposed to be a major advantage.
Right, but it really never felt that way, right? So if they turn that around, which I don't see any way in the world that it won't improve, then they're a much more competitive. I think that 5-11 is probably 8-8 last year.
Yeah, Tony, I talked about, and it's a common thing you see throughout the course of the summer, DBs and wide receivers, and you see a lot of what you're going to get out of those guys. And with the exception of how the quarterback's throwing the ball, there's not much more that you and I and Tony can gather from some of those practices.
Right, although Blake Bortles looking the way he's looked is very encouraging, meaning he's looked veteran. He hasn't had those – in the past couple off seasons, there would be practices where you walked off and went, well, he said he's not a good practice player.
Right.
And that was sort of the thing where you went, I never worried about Blake's practices because of that. I knew he was more of a gamer. But you haven't really seen those moments out there. That's good.
But it's still an environment where you should excel as a quarterback, in those situations.
And for him to be getting there can be a good sign.
Now, with that being said, Jalen Ramsey has, been a guy who's drawn your eye, both in non-pads and shells or whatever. What about Miles Jack? What do you gather? Is the coaching staff happy with what they've seen from him? And granted, it's only a handful of days,
right?
And it's not full conditions like we're going to be in today. But what have been the early returns for
him? I'll preface this by saying I've happened to watch Ramsey and Fowler a lot more because I've been waiting until the pads go on to really watch Jack. I think that's where you get more of a feel for a linebacker. He's fast. He's everything they expected. Certainly a position, if you think about it, a Ramsey's out there and you can tell him to go cover a guy. Fowler's out there and you can tell him to go rush and hit. Jack's at a position, middle linebacker, that they're telling him, we need you to learn this. So he's probably not going to stand out and look quite as instinctive as you would expect those other two guys because he's got more going through his head, he's processing more, and because he really didn't get here until the last 3 days of the offseason. So this is a guy who's really in preschool. So you've seen the quickness. You've seen everything you want. But I would hate to sit there and say that I've really, really watched him enough to have anything to say. But they're not disappointed with Miles Jack in any way.
No, and look, I've watched him this weekend. Any rep he was on the field, that's who I was watching. And there are times
pretty fast.
You can tell. Right. You can tell that it's like, okay, he's trying to figure this thing out still.
Right.
And there's a lot going on in his head. And then every now and then there'd be that rep where just he let it rip and you're like,
right.
Ooh. There's the guy that I thought they'd be getting.
Right.
It's just trying to get to the point where you get that every play.
Well, why isn't he working with the starters? Why isn't he on the outside? I think the idea is they knew talking to Jalen that what they were going to give him in the first week that he could handle, he was ready for. Fowler the same way. He's been in a long time. Again, Jack just got here June, 13th? And really didn't have that May month even to immerse himself in what they were even talking about. So run him with the second team. Let him get up to speed. At some point, that's going to change, and they'll know the right time to change that.
Sure. The pads go on today, obviously, and that means, at least for me, we've talked about the lines of scrimmage and how that changes for them today. But it also means that, in my mind, the running back battle begins in earnest today, too, with Ivory and Yeldon, with the physicality being ramped up. Where do you think that stands right now?
Well, I don't think of it as much of a battle because I don't really think the team necessarily cares that much who starts. I think it's going to be more of a what's the best situation. I think they're looking to find out exactly, okay, how are we going to use Chris Ivory? How are we going to use T.J. Yeldon? If they feel like the packages are better for a pass-oriented, quick-hit drive on the first drive of the season, then I think Yeldon's probably in there as a starter. If they're wanting to establish and they're wanting to, grind and pound or whatever, then I think Ivory's probably in there as a starter. So I don't know how to define who starts. My guess is you're going to see the entire preseason when the depth chart's released with that code. With that parentheses where they're on the same. And I don't know that necessarily changes going into the regular season. I think they probably go with that, and it's going to be a package situation more than saying who is going to start because they're looking for them to bring different things. So I don't know that they're competing against each other as much as us in the media sort of want that competition as something to talk about.
Who, if anybody, other than some of these usual suspects that we've been talking about all summer, has caught your eye or that you've noticed has caught the coaching staff's eye?
Well, I can say that the secondary is just so much better. I mean, that's really been a big takeaway. And it's not so much an individual catching the eye. It's more we got Jalen Ramsey and Prince. Aaron Colvin's kind of taken a little bit of a step back just because he's not going to be that guy in there in the first four games. Then you have Tashawn Gibson. Peyton Thompson is a guy who they believe can play, and if Tashawn Gibson can't go a couple of games, that they're not going to be just swimming out there. So he's caught the eye. He's obviously not going to start. But that secondary as a whole just being so much deeper, so much different than what they had to roll out there two or three years ago. And that's just one area, but that's the area that I've talked to people about where it's like, yeah, if we get some pass rush, it's not a fluke that they're getting some interceptions in OTAs
sure.
in camp. It's a much more instinctive group, much more capable group. And that's not even with Jalen Ramsey having those NFL experience ball instincts yet.
We were asking fans today who they're most excited about seeing in pads, basically, with them going on. We've gotten a lot of Dante Fowler Jr. already, which makes a lot of sense. Take us off maybe, you know, the guys that are expected to be starters on this team. Who are you looking forward to seeing in pads
well,
for the first time?
A Sheldon Day and Yannick Ngakoue are guys that they really are starting to believe not only are long-term guys, but they might be guys who can help him right away. So can Sheldon Day be that guy who sort of forces his way from being a bit player to all of a sudden, hey, this guy is going to make an impact for us fast. I hate to say impact with a rookie, but he how those two guys do against maybe a Brandon Linder. Yannick's not going against Linder, but Sheldon Day going against like a Brandon Linder. Can he do it against the NFL third-year guy? It's going to be interesting to watch.
All right, John Osier here with us. Before we let you go, we mentioned the U.S. Ashore Clubs got unveiled yesterday. You were there. As spectacular as you would have expected.
I was shocked because they're really, really nice.
Really? Surprised that Shad Khan
would do something like that? Usually when Shad Khan rolls something out, you're like, eh,
yeah, half
you know,
measures
it's fine.
And all that stuff.
It's everything you expected. What's fascinating, and I said it before on the air, how we're watching them turn this stadium that we've all been around and seen for 20 years into something new and state-of-the-art before our eyes and on such a phenomenally quick pace. I'm not sure that it's ever really been tried or done before, but when Mark Lamping and Shad got here, they said, we need to transform the stadium. We need to get the capacity down to where it's right for this market size, and we need to do it the right way, which is, and they've done it. You lost some seats in the end zone with the video boards and the pool decks, and now they've gotten the clubs to where it sounds like they're the right amount for this market. And it's not like you're reducing the stadium. You're making it a better experience. You're making it a more state-of-the-art stadium. It's a remarkable transformation for a stadium. When I got back here in 2011, felt outdated. And I think I can speak for everybody when I say that it doesn't anymore.
Yeah, a lot of coverage of that, by the way. If you haven't seen it at Jaguars.com, you can see the shots, some video, and try to
food's pretty good, too, Mike. Do you get any food?
I'm on a diet, or else I would have come down. I told Tony yesterday that I would have left him hanging if I was not on the weight loss kick right now because it looked pretty good.
I don't even know you anymore.
I know. What can I tell you? Sucking on water and going for four-mile walks. That's my life right now, Johnny. But it's working out so far. So
I'm going to go on a two-field walk.
You do that,
I'll do
all right?
That.
They're on the far field right now, which actually helps us, I think. I don't know. We get a little bit more perspective from our angle over here, trying to pick out what's going on. John Osier, senior writer from Jaguars.com on Twitter at John Osier. We'll talk to you in a couple days.
All right, guys. Look forward to it.
Thank you, buddy. There he goes. Johnny O here with us, senior writer from Jaguars.com. Mike Kay going to join us from First Coast News coming up in just a moment. Frank Frangie in the next hour. We'll also hear from Mark Lamping along the way today. With Fat Tony, I'm Mike Nipsey. We're live at the Florida Blue practice facility here. Jaguars on the field. First day in full pads, training camp 2016. It's 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. Hey, folks, Mike Dempsey here for Dandy Foods, Dandy Sandwiches and Subs. You know what? All this dieting makes me hungry for about 15 Dandy Tuna Salad Sandwiches. I could probably eat about 12 right now and save the other three for later. Hey, you know what? Dandy. They actually do have some really good, healthy alternatives. Sandwich wraps for lunch. They've got all kinds of great, fresh ingredients. So you're never, even when you're trying to cut down a little bit of weight, you don't have to avoid eating Dandy sandwiches and subs. The new breakfast sliders are absolutely fantastic. $3 gets you two. You pop into your local Kangaroo Express or Circle K. You're in and out and on your way in about 2 minutes, and you don't waste your morning or your lunch hour sitting in a drive-thru waiting for some greasy food. Dandy sandwiches and subs made by a local family. The Thompsons been in business for over 60 years here in Jacksonville because they provide quality products at a price that you can absolutely afford, and you'll keep coming back for more. I do it, folks. Whenever you're hungry, go out and make yours a Dandy and do it today.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Yeah, we're kind of in the mobile studio today.
A little bit.
Good thing, too, because deadline's coming, but they're not quite ready with the JOI studio on the inside. It's coming along, but not quite there yet.
Nope.
As I talked to one of the guys who's wiring up the place this morning, had one tiny bead of sweat rolling down his temple. He said, it's getting close, man. Yes, it is. Jaguars today need to get back in our roost sooner rather than later. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you at the Florida Blue practice fields. Jags on the field. Just going through some early warm-up paces. Good morning, ladies. How are you? Thanks for the wave. And full pads today. You know what? That's Jaguar fandom right there, man. I love it. Mike Kay here with us from First Coast News. What's up, brother? How are you?
Nothing, man. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're welcome for having you. And you've become quite now. I brought this up once on Twitter, and you're like, hey, I'm more than this. But you have become quite the social media outlet for Jag fans, in addition to your fine writing and broadcast skills. You're quite the Vine guy and all these little videos, and you're kind of like the go-to. How have you created this as your niche?
Well, not to kiss any butt here, but we're pretty blessed with what the Jaguars allow us to shoot out here, and I'm just taking advantage. You know, fans constant. You know, there's a lot of diehard fans in this fan base, and they really, really want content. So I think what I've looked at is, from a fan perspective, what type of video would I want to see, and then obviously capturing these guys playing really, really well out here, like the studio work in progress. It's kind of interesting to just kind of document that.
So who are the guys, now that the pads are on, that your attention will be drawn to over the course of this next week?
Well, now it's the linemen. You know, without pads, you could get a lot of the wide receiver cornerback drills. Now there's going to be actual hitting. The offensive line isn't at a disadvantage. The defensive line just can't rely solely on speed. So, you know, we got some good stuff last year with Jokel and Ryan Davis and, you know, Avery Jones and Roy Miller against Zane Beatles. So, you know, that's probably what we're going to be focusing
those
on.
Those seem like two, now in retrospect, unfair kind of situations, you know, distinctively advantage to the defense in those circumstances. How do you think Jokel has looked so far? And granted, full pads are on for the first time today.
I think he's looked fine. I mean, it's kind of tough for him learning left guard and then also moving to left tackle. That's something that I think, you know, we talk about the left tackle battle being very important. The left guard battle, whoever loses the left tackle battle or whoever gets the left guard job is just as important, it seems like, because that side of the ball is going to have to work together. If you were just cool with whatever you're going to put it there at left guard, they would have kept Zane Beatles. You know what I mean? So I think Jokel's done a fine job. You know, Calvin Beecham's nipping at his heels. He's out first to practice every single day. And, you know, it's going to be a really good battle.
You know, I'm curious with a guy like Jokel, if you can learn to play with a chip. Right, like, and that's kind of what it feels like Jokel has to do this year. They bring in a guy to compete directly for that spot that you were drafted number two overall to play. They don't pick up your option. You know, there's a lot on the table for Luke Jokel going into this season that just hasn't been there. That kind of pressure hasn't been there the last several years. And I'm curious, watching through the early part of training camp and going into the next several weeks, if you can learn to kind of play with that chip on your shoulder. I think Jokel's an example. We're going to find out whether or not he can.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you look at Eric Fisher and Lane Johnson both getting long-term extensions, Jokel doesn't even get his option picked up. I mean, this is the year. And I talked to him earlier on the offseason, and he said he knows he has to be at a certain place. Marone said he came in looking stronger. He was in better shape. But, you know, we're not going to know till we actually get some hits going, and hopefully today we'll learn a thing or two about Luke.
You know, it just goes to show you, though, Eric Fisher has been a guy, particularly the first couple of years of his career, who was just as maligned as Luke Jokel was. He was okay, last year. He's not anybody's rising superstar, I don't think. And yet he did get, what, a four-year, $48 million, something like that. So just goes to show you how hard it is to find a guy. That's why, again, Tony and I have talked about this a lot. The creative contract they signed Kelvin Beachum to is brilliant. And you've got a deal in place if this guy turns out to be what he looked like he was, an ascending top 10 potential left tackle.
Well, and, you know, he's out here. Like, he's out here. He wants to play. The second day of training camp, he's out here having in contact drills and team drills. He was the first guy out here today, full pads. He wants this left tackle job. He does not want to play left guard. He doesn't. He said it several times. So you're going to have a situation where whoever loses this battle is going to play a position they don't want to play, and I think that's going to push a lot of those guys. And Fisher got a lot of guaranteed money after playing, you know, mediocre for a guy who's known for developing offensive line talent in Andy Reid. So it's very interesting to see where this is going to go.
What kind of chance do you give it that the guys playing left guard and tackle, whatever combination it happens to be, aren't named, you know, Jokel and Beachum? Is there somebody else that can win that left guard spot?
I mean, if it were me, I would look elsewhere. I don't think Mackenzie Bernadou has been anything, you know, to be excited about. This waiver wire, you're going to see guards cut. I got asked yesterday about Stefan Wisniewski, why they didn't re-sign him. He's competing for a left guard spot in my old stomping grounds in Philly. I don't know. It's going to be hard. I know they like Tyler Shatley, but it seems like he's going to be the backup center. Luke Boanko is going to be out on PUP for quite some time. It's tough. They're in a tough situation at left guard because Luke Jokel's attributes don't really stack up to playing left guard. He hasn't done well against speed, a combination of speed and power. You can put him against Jarrell Casey and J.J. Watt every, you know, four times a year. J.J. Watt will move around.
Yeah, well, and yet, despite that, guys who are, you know, close to the team feel like it's almost a mortal certainty. At least that's the sense I get,
right,
that is the combination. They will start in some combination here.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. You look at those guys, look at them side by side particularly. Never would you think Jokel's the guard and Beachum's the tackle.
Right.
You know, you don't see tackles that short very often in the National Football League. 6'3" is not short. It is by NFL offensive tackle standards. Let's get off of what we've seen just in the last week here, Mike, because we don't have you on all the time. And just, you know, your impressions of the pressure that's on his coaching staff, particularly obviously Gus Bradley at the top of Todd Wash, first year as a coordinator, coming off 12 wins in 3 years. What is the minimum acceptable standard? I know you can't read Shad Khan's mind, and he has the final say, but what do you think it is?
Well, after him coming back this year, you would it's impossible to know, right? I mean, after last year, I mean, they were in the playoff stretch for the last six games, and they probably played their worst football during that stretch. So, and he still got an extension. So I think there's a lot of pressure on there. I think Todd Wash was the right guy for the job. The defensive line loves him, and you hear everybody praise him inside the locker room. He's the complete opposite of Bob Babich in every sense. He wants to attack. He's understanding of what players' talent is. Devon House said to me the other day that this scheme fits the players' talent and alluded that it didn't before. So I think they've kind of realized they need to attack. This is the year.
But whose fault is that? Is that Babich's fault, or is that Gus Bradley's fault, who comes in as a defensive coach with an idea that we don't want to blitz on this team? We want to follow the Seattle model of getting after you with our front four defensive linemen, and, you know, they didn't have the personnel to play that, but he wanted to establish, I think, that mindset and that pattern of this is how we play defense.
Well, I think half of a good head coach's job is making really good hires, and he has clearly not made good hires. So it's all on Gus. It is all on Gus. You either make the good hires, have a scheme that adjusts the talent, and win, or you do what they've done the last 3 years. It's tough. I mean, if you're Caldwell or you're Khan, you know, what has changed outside of them drafting well on defense now this year on paper and them bringing in new defense? You know what I mean? New defensive players.
Right, but it's changed significantly, it looks like, at least on
paper. No doubt about it. And I guess going into 2016, the question becomes, you know, what do you think is the floor and what do you think is the ceiling for this roster?
I think if they get into a fight for 9-7 for the wild card, it's doable. I can't see this team not winning six games. I just can't. They've upgraded so much as far as talent. I mean, now it's on Todd Wash and Greg Olsen to carry on and call the right plays, and obviously Gus, and obviously injuries. But right now with this roster, I mean, they are definitely way more talented on defense.
You would think that there'd be no way, and I agree with you, but looking at it, you know, 2 years ago, coming off that four-win season where they had probably the worst first half of any team in NFL history, and then they got hot at the right time, won four in a row. Didn't think there was any way they would regress then. So, and again, I recognize, and we all do, there's so much more talent on this team this year, but I think they should have been a seven-win team last year. Agreed. As it was, you know. So they've got to find a way to execute when the games are on the line and take advantage of those opportunities. You've got to create a sense of expectation of winning in this locker room.
Well, and it seems like Gus has been holding guys a lot more accountable in practice, at least this training camp. I've only covered the team for 2 years. But he's in guys' faces constantly. He's constantly talking. He's moving from drill to drill, saying, hey, this is what you need to do better. This is what we need from you. Hey, good job. But, you know, there's a level of communication on the field that I don't think was there last year.
It's a weird thing. It's kind of like when we're sitting here and we say, well, you know, Blake threw an interception. It's like, that means somebody intercepted him. You know, there's a good and a bad with that. And, you know, hearing about the accountability with Gus, which is a word we've heard through the first week here, is holding guys more accountable. We've heard that about Todd Wash on the defensive side of the ball, too. Those questions naturally come in your head of, well, what have they been doing? You know, like, that's the next thought for me is, why now? You know, why does it take 4 years before that kind of thing comes on board with a team? I know they've been young, but that doesn't mean they don't need to be held accountable. It's frustrating.
Well, it's the right question to ask. The fan base should be asking that consistently, and I think they have. I mean, you know, why the sudden urgency now? I mean, they've brought in veteran free agents before. They've drafted well before. Now it just kind of seems like they're trying to put every piece in place to win now.
I do think part of it is that the coaching staff knows their personnel. They realize that, yeah, this guy's getting whipped. And I know there's some people say, well, if you get whipped enough, you got to try something different regardless. But if you know that other alternative is even worse than the one you're throwing out there, I think that's been part of the problem. It's hard to have accountability when you know the drop-off between what you have and the next guy in line is as steep as it's been at various times. Not only is the starting lineup going to be better, the depth is going to be better, and that creates better competition. Mike K on Twitter, at Mike_E_K. That's Mike_E_KAYE. Where else do you want folks to know where they can find you?
Well, you can find me on First Coast News sports page. Got daily content, videos, articles, commentary, etc.
FirstCoastNews.com and all over social media, one of the favorites of the Jaguars' growing fan base out there. Mike, we appreciate you stopping by, man. At least it's not too broiling hot out there today as we kick you out of our tent.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you having me while I was able to be in here, you know.
Well, we time things out. We understand what the pattern of practice is and all that. So we appreciate you stopping by. We'll be looking for all the latest vines coming up, I'm sure, at some point later this afternoon. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Mike K, First Coast News here with us. Frank Franchi next hour coming up. We'll also hear from Mark Lamping, president of the Jags, talking about the new U.S. Assure clubs that were unveiled yesterday. We've got this date in football and the Honda drive around the NFL. Straight ahead, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live at Jaguar training camp on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Let's go back to 1961, August 2nd, 1961. The St. Louis Cardinals at the time, Tony, defeated the Toronto Argonauts by a score of 36-7 in Toronto. It was one of six exhibition games over an 11-year period that the NFL played against the Canadian Football League. They played it during the NFL's preseason. They did it during the CFL's regular season. They kind of took a break to play against the NFL. The NFL 6-0 in those games, although the Hamilton Tiger Cats did beat the Buffalo Bills of the AFL about a year after that series ended, and that was the last time the AFL won. Play against the CFL. So
I can't imagine why.
Yeah, maybe the CFL thinks they're the ones who should have been involved in the merger. A couple of the Chicago All-Star Games were played on this date in 1963. The 30th one saw the Collegiate All-Stars knock off the NFL champion Lombardi-led Green Bay Packers 20-17. In 1968, Green Bay got their revenge 34-17 against the Collegiate All-Stars. Famous birthdays for this date. How about 1932? He's passed away. Now, Lamar Hunt, the former owner of the Kansas City Chiefs, who passed away in 2006 at the age of 74 years old. Lamar Hunt is in the Professional Football Hall of Fame. He's in the Soccer Hall of Fame. He's also in the Tennis Hall of Fame, Tony. Hmm. And he won one of the most prestigious awards that the National Soccer Hall of Fame bestowed upon him, the Medal of Honor, in 1999. The Medal of Honor has been won by Alan Rothenberg, who was the director of the 1994 World Cup, Lamar Hunt himself, who was a co-founder of the North American Soccer League back in the 60s that ran up into the 80s. He owned three different MLS teams during the early 2000s and built the first soccer-specific stadium in the United States. The other two enshrinees, the 1991 Women's National Team, which won the World Cup, the entire team went in, and Phil Anschutz, who's considered the most influential person in terms of growing soccer in the U.S. At one point, he owned 6 of 10 MLS teams during the early 2000s. So Lamar Hunt, born on this date. Other famous birthdays for this date include LSU legend Billy Cannon. Billy Cannon, 79 years old today, born in 1937, won the Heisman Trophy in 1959, a two-time Pro Bowler at both halfback once and tight end another time. He was the first pick in the NFL draft in 1960. Born in this date in 1950, happy 66 to Lance Ito, the judge in the OJ trial. And also on this date in 1988, former Notre Dame Golden Domer Golden Tate, who's now toiling for the Detroit Lions.
Was it Billy Cannon that was the first pick in the NFL and AFL draft?
Was he? Might have been.
He might have been, where there was that big fight over whether which league he was going to go to. And it was kind of like behind the scenes bargaining going on between the teams that had those top picks as to where he was going to go. And I think he it was kind of like recruiting nowadays, where he pulled the carpet out from underneath one team or the other. But I can't remember if that was Billy Cannon or not. I know it was one of those first overall picks around 1959. Had to be.
I will tell you in a minute when I maybe. Yes, he was. There you go. Good call. 1960 first pick. Actually, no, he was a territorial pick in the AFL, but he was a first-round territorial pick, meaning certain teams had, much like the USFL years later, had the rights to certain schools, and if you went to that school and the team wanted you, you had to play for that team, at least upon entering the league. This date in football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. If you're a snorer or you have one in the family, get the custom-fit SomniMed mouth guard. It is a revelation. 620-9225 if you're in the market for a family dentist or need cosmetic work done. In the meantime, visit jamesjmccall.com. Get a complete list of their comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
A weird Billy Cannon note that I just came across on his Wikipedia page. He's still a dentist at the Louisiana State Penitentiary. He's been there for about 20 years. He's 78 years old and still a dentist at the Louisiana State Penitentiary. So that's interesting.
He was 78 yesterday. He's 79 today. How about that?
Congratulations. Charged wide receiver Stevie Johnson is set to undergo surgery on a torn meniscus, according to NFL insider Ian Rappaport. He reported the Chargers are also hosting longtime Packers wideout James Jones today. James Jones had 50 catches, 890, and 8 touchdowns last year. Rappaport also said this morning San Diego is working out former Browns wide receiver Brian Hartline. DeAndre Hopkins holdout lasted just one day after the receiver reported to the Houston Texans camp over the weekend. He reiterated yesterday that he still believes he deserves to get paid more than the $1 million base salary he's due to earn this season. And Texans owner Bob McNair told the Houston Chronicle's John McClain that he was glad to have Hopkins back in camp quickly and said, quote, "We'll deal with his contract at the proper time. We'll take care of our players and we'll take care of him." Also, Reggie Bush signed a one-year incentive-laden contract with the Buffalo Bills. And a strange story with the L.A. Rams. The team has not heard from their second-string running back, Trey Mason. I have not heard from Mason since the end of last season, Coach Jeff Fisher said. I haven't personally spoken with Trey since the end of the season. I tried numerous times to reach him. Trey has made a decision not to communicate with us, not talking to his teammates. Right now, we're more concerned about Trey's well-being than we are his football career. TMZ reports that he has had 5 encounters with police during his last 4 months. The most recent encounter was a really strange one that occurred on July 23rd, reportedly featured Mason behaving strangely and making bizarre statements, according to a police report filed by the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office. Cops say Trey's mother had called because her son was making weird statements, and the report said that when Trey saw the cops, he threatened to call the White House and have them all fired and made bizarre statements about Al-Qaeda. So a weird story with Trey Mason. There. Really strange. And last but certainly not least, congrats to former Vanderbilt and former one-time Jaguars quarterback Jordan Rodgers. He received the final
And most important, rose from JoJo last night in the Bachelorette finale. The two are now happily engaged.
dumbest thing ever. It's just the dumbest thing ever. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I saw Hicken retweeting somebody last night talking about the Vanderbilt National Championships, and now Jordan Rodgers is included in that group of national champions. By the way, going back to the Hopkins story.
Because of the Bachelor?
Yeah, just for just a moment.
Which one is it, the Bachelor or the Bachelorette?
Bachelorette.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
The woman was
it's whoever's choosing, yeah. But going back to Hopkins here for a second, talking about, you know, the team saying we'll take care of him at the proper time. Well, apparently the proper time was after 3 years for J.J. Watt. It was after 3 years for Whitney Mercilus, and this was the proper time to pay a guy who started seven games, $18 million a year to play quarterback for you, but reward DeAndre Hopkins, who's a Pro Bowl wide receiver for you. I guess this is not the proper time. I completely understand every bit of his frustration with that organization. They've already shown that they're willing to do this after 3 years, and then not do it for him is a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah. I understand the need to go out and get a quarterback, right? And the feeling is DeAndre Hopkins is going to perform regardless. But you're right. You don't want to build up that kind of resentment in the locker room. You want guys to know that if you perform at a high level, they're going to get rewarded. At the same time, he's under contract. And look, I don't have an issue. It's his choice. If he wants to hold out and risk a fine for a couple of days, so be it. It's the leverage, and it's allowed. You know, it's that's why it's written in the fine structure into the collective bargaining agreement. They anticipate these kind of situations. But you're right, Tony. I mean, you give $18 million to Osweiler, maybe break off a little piece for a guy like DeAndre Hopkins as well. And how about this? A little drop in on us right now. Pete Prisco, CBS Sports, joins us here on 1010XL. What's up, Pete?
What's up?
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. First day out here at Jags camp for you this year?
Yeah, I was traveling. And
waiting for the pads?
Yeah, I actually have to cut my trip short. I had a little medical issue. So.
You okay?
Yeah, I think. A little hope.
All right. Well, we hope so,
good
too.
Good enough to be here, at least, right?
I had to come home, you know?
Yeah.
What are you looking at now? When the pads go on, what are the type of things you're looking for, whether it's specific to this team or not?
Line play. I mean, you got to watch the line, both lines. That's always when the pads go on. That's when you can really get an idea. I know, I've been reading the stuff out of here, and Gogway's having a great, you know, but pads go on today.
Let's see, right?
Yeah, right. I want to see you with pads on. You know, the other thing, too, is when you look at, you know, guys like Miles Jack and those guys, can they get off blocks? You know, because they're really not tackling, but they are blocking. So can they get off blocks? That type of thing.
As we talk to Pete Prisco here just for a few moments, and your first opportunity to get out for camp, I haven't seen you out here, but I know you've been running around the country looking at a bunch of different teams. Have you had an opportunity to see anybody in the South yet in
no,
the division?
No, I was on my way to Houston when I decided to cut it short and come home, but I went to Denver and went to L.A. I never got to see the Rams, unfortunately. I'll tell you the story off air, but I did spend a couple days with the Broncos, and they're going to be really, really good on defense again. But they got questions on that offense.
Is Sanchez the odds-on favorite to open the season? And how serious is the Trevor Siemian talk out there?
It's serious. It really is. I mean, I ran that by Elway. I said, come on, John, seriously? He said, no, it's serious. That kid's good. They have talent. You know, they're trying to bridge it till they get the Lynch.
Sure.
That's the idea. And the days I was there, he was wild as wild can be.
Lynch was?
Yeah, big arm, but wild as can be. But, you know, Simeon's got a good arm, and he understands the offense. I mean, there's a big difference when you watch the three quarterbacks throw between what Sanchez is doing with his arm and what the other two do with their arm. Simeon's got a really good arm. Is he going to be the starter? No. I think Sanchez is going to be the starter. Kubiak says he's not going to make a decision until the third preseason game, but I think he's made that decision that Sanchez will open the season as the starter.
How long do you think it takes for a team like Jacksonville where it feels like the offense, there's some steps it needs to take to get more consistent, but defensively they had a bunch of issues last year. They bring in all these new faces, new names, new guys, and new spots to try to help that defense. How long do you think it generally takes to build that side of the ball, for it to look like what it's going to look like?
You mean to make it look like a dominant defense like
yes.
Seattle or Denver?
Right.
That's another year away, I think. I think they'll be good or better on defense. I don't, you know, be dominant on defense, that's a year away. Because it takes so many parts to work together and young guys filling their roles and everything. So, yeah, I think it's going to take a while. I'll tell you this, Jaguar fans will like this. I did talk to Brandon Marshall when I was in Denver. I said, boy, there's one mistake they made. And he goes, yeah, I hear that a lot, that they've admitted to that, and they have admitted to it, because he's a heck of a player, Brandon Marshall.
Yeah, he's turned out to be, and he's earned that big contract out there. All right, Pete, as we wrap up with you, pick the Jags to win the division
yep.
this year. Every team in the division, though, every team, probably every or feels like they get better in the offseason. Why do you think Jacksonville has done enough to overcome and leap over teams like Houston and Indy?
Well, I still think Houston has major questions. I mean, obviously, with you're talking about J.J. Watt back now. You know, the quarterback is new. Everybody's ready to anoint him. He's new. There's a lot of issues on that team. So I'm not ready to put them there. The Colts, yeah, Luck's back. They're going to be the factor. They're all going to be in the race. I mean, it's not going to be like anybody's going to run away with it. But they have major issue. Who's going to rush the passer? You talk about this team having pass rush issues. Who's going to rush the passer for Indianapolis? They don't have a guy. So that's why I think Jacksonville, when you all add it all up, they're going
to
win it.
Yeah, I saw yesterday the word to describe Andrew Luck the first week of camp. Underwhelming was that the word used to describe him.
You know, two things this league are going way, 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 way past on. Aaron Rodgers didn't play well last year, and Andrew Luck isn't good anymore. Come on.
Oh, nobody said
everybody's all over Andrew Luck and Aaron Rodgers.
Hey, I'm just trying to latch on to a little hope. If I hear underwhelming, I'll take that out of Andrew Luck. You know?
don't count on it.
He was underwhelming when he did play last year. Was he hurt all last year?
Yeah, he was hurt all last year.
Regardless of when he was in
there.
Yeah,
he was hurt.
All right. Pete Prisco, CBS Sports, and CBSSports.com. Thank you, buddy.
All right, guys.
We'll see you soon. Here he goes out there to watch a little popping out there on the practice field. Frank Frangie going to join us next, the voice of your Jacksonville Jaguars. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. We'll hear a little bit from Mark Lamping a little bit later on as well about the unveiling of the new U.S. Assure clubs here at Everbank Field. As Jaguars Today rolls on live at practice for the Jags training camp 2016 on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we continue along here. Jaguar training camp 2016. The pads are on. I haven't seen a whole lot of popping and hitting, grunting.
At least not from our spot, no.
No, not so far.
I saw Marquise Lee running around a few moments ago right here on this field closest to us, so he's running at least a little bit. He's not in pads or anything, but he's out here trying to get some work done on the side as he continues to recover from that hamstring strain.
You know, I asked Frank Frangie, what time do you want to come on today? He said, what time are those clouds going to break?
Yeah, exactly right.
About 11:15.
It's all about timing, bro.
About 11:15, then, and you're welcome for a little tent shade for you. How are you?
I'm good, brother. This is good. This is exciting, man. I'm as excited about the start of – I mean, I'm always excited when it starts, but as excited about the start of this one as I've been in a long time.
Not to be. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's really just the raw talent on the roster. Still got it all come together and everything. But you've been out here. Every time I've been out here, I've seen you out here. What has stood out to you over the first few days?
I'm probably going to mimic what everybody else has said, Mike. The amount of athleticism, watching Jalen Ramsey and Colvin and Amukamara and Tayshaun Gibson run around in that secondary, it just hasn't looked like that, man, in a long time. We talked about this on our show. Man, we spent so much time in these last years hoping maybe McCray's good, hoping maybe Ryan Davis and Chris Smith are diamonds in the rough. Maybe we spent more time hoping maybe the diamond in the rough will shine. Well, these guys aren't diamond in the rough now. They're Malik Jackson's a baller. Looks like Fowler and Ngakoue are going to be ballers. It looks like Miles Jack, when he figures out what to do, he's spinning right now, is going to be a really good player. That, to me, more than anything else, Mike, is how many fast, athletic-looking, big, football-looking guys they've got on defense, which is really different than it's been.
Oh, they went straight to the market instead of the mine to get their diamonds for the first time in a very long time. And you have a bunch of guys on the field that it's like, we know there's an expectation for a guy like Gibson. There's an expectation for a guy like Malik Jackson. And heck, you know, Fowler and Ramsey with their draft stock, there's an expectation with those guys. And Miles Jack, if he hadn't had the knee injury, wouldn't be there. You know, he wouldn't be a Jacksonville Jaguar if they were going to have Ramsey, too. So there's a lot of excitement, and I think for good reason, especially on that side of the ball. And I think we've seen through the first week, especially compared to the last couple of years, they are so much better on that side of the ball, and they're competing with the offense so much better early on in training camp than they have the first couple of years. And it's a really, really promising sign for this team.
Boy, this guy, Jalen Ramsey now, man, he just looks the part, acts the part. Dan Edwards said he reminds him of Mel Blunt. The old Steeler guy from years gone by. He was a 6'2", 215-pound cornerback that they waited every year to move to safety and never did.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading a story one time that receivers hated practicing against him, not because they couldn't get open and wouldn't catch any passes, that too, but because it hurt. He'd push you and he'd slap at you and he's physical and he'd shove you around. So nobody wanted to practice against the guy because of the physical. But that's how it looks out here. I mean, this guy, Jalen Ramsey, if he's not everything they expect him to be, I would be shocked. Of all the guys they've drafted in recent years, if he's not everything they've – and I think Fowler's going to be very good, but if Jalen Ramsey's not everything they expect him to be, when we look back in 7 years, I'd be shocked.
His is not a quiet confidence.
No, it is not. No, it's not. No, it's not.
He lets you know about it, and that's, you know, you kind of want that, right? Your top cover guy out there, and really anybody who's out there on that proverbial island a little bit. Frank Frangie here with us, voice of the Jags. Of course, the Frangie Show, a weekday afternoons here on 1010XL from 3 until 7, or they usually get out early, man.
We're
I
trying.
Know that show rolls.
We got the 6. We're shooting for 5.
They have 14 hosts you know, Frank can stop talking at 4:30. Nobody really noticed.
We got 6 accomplished. The goal's 5 now. Okay. You got to have goals, Mike.
Keep marching along.
Life's really about goals.
All right. Well, one of the goals for the Jaguars, a terrific segue there, is to figure out the left side of the offensive line, right? And it seems like they've been alternating Joku at tackle one day, Beecham at tackle the next, the other one moving to the inside to play guard. Is it, in your mind, a virtual certainty that that will be the combination, one of those two combinations will open the season, and which way do you think it'll go?
There's no doubt in my mind that that'll be your left side. I don't think Mackenzie Bernardo is the next guy. I think he's going to be a backup. I'd be very surprised, and no one's told me that. This is my read on it, if it's not Beecham and Joku over there. I think Beecham's going to be the left tackle, and I think Joku's going to be the left guard. Having said that, I've seen it work more the other way. Even today, first day in full pads, when they went team, it was Joku outside and Beecham at left guard. That surprised me the first time I saw it, because Beecham, despite looking like a guard because he's only 6'2", really isn't a guard. He's not played it very much. He didn't play it in college. They tried him there in Pittsburgh for a while, but they moved him to tackle right away. He's been a tackle. Now, so is Joku. So one of them's got to play a spot they haven't played very much. I've said all along, and I'll stand by it, I think it's going to be Beecham and Joku. But that's a guess, Mike. But I would be very surprised if it's not those two guys in some capacity. And you're right. That's really the question. I don't have a lot of questions about the defense other than there's so many new pieces. Will they fit together? Is Tayshawn Gibson as good a center fielder as we hope? Is Malik Jackson as good a three technique as we think? You know, there's a little of that, but I don't doubt all the pieces there. Left side's a piece.
I do think how they're going to use Miles Jack is very interesting.
Yeah, you're right.
Right?
Yeah.
How he's because he's too good to not get him on the field, but at the expense of who and in what type situations, right?
Yeah, you're right. So we've all been guessing, right? Okay, he's being trained as a backup Mike. Well, they got a pretty good middle linebacker. So, well, he's fast, so he'll be a nickel Mike. Well, that pretty good middle linebacker isn't fast, but kind of knows where to be then too. So yeah, you're right. It doesn't appear he's worked much at the strong side. It looks like Ryan Davis is going to be the backup to Dan Scuda, Tony. So it doesn't look like he's. But I agree with Mike. Here's what I'm going to bet you. Somehow, somebody's going to be on the field a lot. I'm just not sure how.
I can't imagine Miles Jack not being a three-down linebacker. It's just hard to imagine they don't try to find a way to get him on the field as much as they possibly can. And there are guys on defense where there are serious questions about how often they can even be on the field. I mean, they bring in a guy like Prince Amukamara this offseason, and how often is he playing for this team when they go three corners even, especially as soon as Aaron Colvin's back?
What a great problem that is.
Right, but they have depth at spots that they just haven't had it before. Yeah. As I've said before this offseason, it's welcome to the 21st century of NFL football to the Jags, where there are issues with how can we get everybody time on the field and reps.
Now, know this. The one thing no one's talking about because nobody wants to talk about, know this. Someone's going down. No one saw an Aaron Colvin suspension coming, and boom, it happened, okay? Someone's twisted an ankle, and that's where he's
going to
go.
Not on this team. Yeah.
but I think that's how it plays out. I think that's how it plays out. All of a sudden, player X, who you knew was going to be your strong side backer or your three technique, is down for 2 weeks. Now it flays it. Now that's where Miles Jack goes. Oh, and now that's where Sheldon Day goes. I think it's going to play out that way. It always does.
It always does. And this year, for the first time in a while, there's a lot of positions you can point to and say, if they lost somebody, it's not panic time at that position. We feel like we got guys that are pros that can come in and play that spot.
What are the handful of panic spots still left? Free safety, maybe?
Just because of the drop at free safety.
Weak side linebacker with Telvin, maybe?
Right, in terms of
but
backup.
Miles may be able to play that.
He could.
Yeah, I think you could put Jack in just about any spot.
Yeah, but there's not many of, oh, my God, now what do we do? There's not nearly as much of that as there's been.
You know, I wonder, though, is Parnell kind of on the right side? Because let's say you could play Joku there, certainly.
Yeah.
But he's not exactly renowned for, you know, his power at the tackle position, and you want to be able to run behind that side of the offensive line.
Maybe. He may be guy. You don't know. Josh Wells is an okay player. He's not an NFL starter. So you're right. That's a
spot. If they went with Wells out there,
really,
if they take Joe out.
The whole offensive line, not just right tackle. I mean, if Linder goes down, who's playing center for this team?
Yeah, so that's a spot. We've heard about Shatley for a long time, but he still hasn't broken into the starting lineup. So maybe that's the other one that – but you're right. Your point's right, though, Tony. There's not nearly as many of, oh, my God, now what? I mean, I remember when Yeldon went down last year thinking, I love Denard. He's a good guy. But, oh, boy. You know, well, now there's Ivory and Yeldon. By the way, I think Ivory's looks fantastic. I haven't even seen him in pads yet until today. But, boy, he moves the needle. I'll bet he's going to be a fantastic acquisition. I really think that.
Well, we'll see. I mean, the line's got to open it up for him, you know, and I think that was as much the problem with the running game last year. Even when Yeldon was in there, it was sporadic, you know, here and there. And, you know, there's hope that it's going to be improved, but we've got to see that unit come together a little bit too. And this is where Chris Ivory should shine now in the next few days with the pads on. That's the kind of guy. In fact, Frank, he really probably shouldn't shine in this circumstance. He's going to shine in the late third quarter into the fourth quarter in games. At least that's the MO of a guy that wears you down over the course of 60 minutes.
We were talking about this. There's physical teams. You don't want to play the Seahawks. You feel like you're going to be sore the next day. The Ravens all those years, the Bucks. You don't want to play teams like that because you feel like you're going to be sore the next day.
Jags used to be that way.
The Jags once upon a time were that team. I wonder if that's coming back a little bit. Malik Jackson, I got a hunch you're not going to want to play against Miles Jack as the years go on. I know you're not going to want to play against Jalen Ramsey as the years go on. I wonder if they're becoming that team. I don't think you're going to want to. I think if you're a linebacker or a strong safety coming up in contain, you're not going to want to have Chris Ivory coming at you 25 times a game. You know, I think there's more of that than there's been.
Yeah, I don't know how scary they'll be, especially defensively in September, but I wouldn't want to be on their schedule in December.
Yeah.
You know, when these guys have a couple months to really play together and some of that gelling goes on, now who knows what's going to happen with injuries, you just can't predict it. But with all the talent they have, especially on the defensive side of the ball, I think it takes some time to get it all together. But I think when it does come together, you're looking at potentially, you know, a top 10 defense in this league out there on the field.
Well, I'll say this. Without even getting into rankings yet, Tony, I'll say this. I think when you're in nickel and everybody's here, I think House is a good player. So I think Ramsey and House and Colvin in that nickel and Gibson at free safety, that's pretty good, man. I hope Sip plays a little better as the other guy out there, but that's pretty good. I mean, I'm trying not to be homer guy. I really am. But, guys, I think that's pretty good. I really do.
You know, we've spent very little time talking, probably all of us, very little time talking about really the return of the guy who was the best player on the team 2 years ago in Cindric Mark.
Yeah,
you know what
point.
I mean? I mean, we and that's great, though, because if he is not one of the first guys you point to, it just goes to show you how far the roster has turned over on that side of the football.
You know what I wonder with him? They have so many three techniques. I mean, Malik Jackson plays it very well. Cindric Marks, you're right, is a very good player. They love this guy, Sheldon Day. I can't get through a day without someone raving about the guy. I think Michael Bennett looks like he's in better shape. He looks like more of a grown man football player now. I wonder if one of those guys, maybe Cindric, becomes a guy, because he's worked there some, that plays that the offside end, the Odrick spot, and puts Tyson Alualo's job in jeopardy. If you keep 10, someone's getting cut.
Right.
Okay? They're not cutting Avery Jones because he's the backup to the shade, which is Miller. You're not cutting Ngakoue or Fowler. They're the two guys there. You're not cutting Odrick. He's the starter there. I wonder if you take one of those 4-3 techniques and he becomes the end behind Odrick. That's good competition.
And Caldwell loves Tyson Alualo.
Yeah, he does.
He does because he's versatile and he's a tough guy, goes about his business, and he always is available. You know, he's always there on game day, banged up, not banged up. You wouldn't know it. And that's an overlooked value, I think, from a fan base in the media as well.
But I don't think you're keeping 11.
Oh, I understand what you're saying. But then again, if they are your best guys, I think 10 is the likely number, but I don't rule it out entirely if you just have too many good guys at one spot.
Who are you cutting there on the defensive line? I just named off 11 guys. Who are you cutting?
Did you name 11?
I did. I'll go. I'll do it again. I'll go. Fowler and Ngakoue, okay, two at one spot. Malik Jackson, Cindric, Sheldon Day, Bennett, that's six. Avery Jones and Miller, that's eight.
Alualo.
Odrick, Alualo. And I'm missing a guy.
I got 10. Cutting the other guy.
I'm missing a guy. Don't do this to me. I had this all figured out. It's making me mad. Who'd I miss?
Brackens.
Didn't I miss a guy?
I don't know.
Maybe I didn't miss a
guy. I don't know. You had 10 there. But
then I guess you keep all those guys.
Point taken. Look, it's whatever it is, they're getting to the point, as Tony's talked about earlier today. You're finally going to have to squeeze good players out that really are going to make your rip your guts out a little bit.
Yeah, you know? And that's a good thing.
Tyson Alualu will get a job like that in the National Football League, if it came down to that.
Any of those guys we just ran off, and again, maybe I'm missing a guy, maybe I just counted wrong, but any of those guys we just ran off, we'll play in the football. We'll play in the NFL.
Absolutely,
any one of those guys. And same with those secondary guys. You know, if Dwayne Grotz and McCray don't make the team this year, that's okay. Because in the past, you needed them to be important players. Now, my guess would be neither one of them make the team.
It's fascinating. Tony and I were at Gus's little presser after Saturday's practice. I don't know if you were there for that, but he, you know, just talking about Grotz, questions about Grotz and McCray. And about 5 seconds in, he goes, well, let me tell you about Ramsey.
he starts
talking about it, and he goes.
He starts talking about that nickel spot,
right.
And he can't help himself but compliment Ramsey again.
He goes, the technique that he already plays at in terms of playing press coverage from the inside, he goes, we just told Dwayne Grotz, take a look. That's what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah.
Which, on the one hand, is a big compliment to Ramsey. It's another, you're wondering, what have they been doing for the last 3 years if Dwayne Grotz doesn't know what the proper technique looks like to play press coverage on the inside? But you get the point. They can't. It's hard to talk about the secondary without Ramsey's name coming up. So.
No question. And to Pete's point, I was sitting here with Pete when you guys were wrapping up. I'm not sure I'm ready to pick them to win the division because I still, as great as that offense was, there's still some things I want to see with the offense. Mid-range passing game. Not how will they be when they're not playing uphill as much? But this thing sure seems built.
It's definitely a possibility to win the division this year. And, you know, when Pete's point, everyone's trying to just coronate Osweiler. I don't think that's the case at all. I think people are saying, well, forget the price tag, what you paid him. Is he better than what they had, which was good enough to win 9 games and win the division last year? Watt, to me, is a bigger concern than Osweiler is going to be. I don't think Osweiler is going to be a drop back from Brian Hoyer from the Texans.
Yeah, and I think Bill O'Brien's got a good feel for that. He missed on Ryan Mallett probably, but I think for the most part he's got a pretty good feel for that and a pretty good sense. He is one of those guys that his quarterback's probably going to play pretty well.
So I
would agree with you. But I say this, John Harris, my buddy who does sidelines. You know John?
Yeah, we had John last
week. John does sidelines for the Texans. I don't know what he told you guys on air, but he told me in Birmingham, he was there doing SEC stuff, that they think the Jaguars are the team to beat. In the Texans building, that's what kind of what they think.
Wouldn't be surprised by that. We got the scrimmage coming up on Friday night, which kind of officially, unofficially begins your third year in the booth here with the Jags. How's it been going through the first two, and what can we expect?
Tony, I think we talked about this when I was on with you guys in the OTAs. Year two, way better than year one. I kind of knew where to sit on the plane, you know, what kind of boards to use. So year one was feeling it out, and I had never been a play-by-play guy for a team. You've done national play-by-play where you're not prompt, or you're not apt to get too caught up in it because you don't really care who wins, right? Year two, I think we had a fun year. Had a good year, and I can't wait to start. I can't wait to start this year. And I think it's the first time we get to do it I do think it's a winning team this year. I do think they're in playoff contention the entire year. I think they're going to make the playoffs. So that part gets me excited. So, continue to learn. Work with great guys. Lagerman and Baselli are so good. I mean, I'm not just saying that. They're really good at it. Joe Fortunato's really good at it. I was shoehorned into a team that's really good. So I was the lucky guy, and I can't wait to start your
thing. Don't go talking up Joe Fortunato.
A lot more space in the booth this year with Baselli.
Yeah. You know what? There
Holy
is.
Cow.
You know what?
Seriously.
I said this the other day. I said, Lagerman works out right at 11 times a day. Baselli has lost 90 pounds. I walked in and I said, I'm not a heavy guy. I think I'm the fat guy. I think I looked up and became the fat guy. How'd I get? I've never been the fat guy. I'm the fat guy in the booth, just like that.
Baselli's on a hunger strike or something. It's shocking.
He's kind of skeletal.
Is
that?
You recognize Tony, but if you just did a silhouette, you never would have guessed that's Tony Baselli. So, all right, Frank Frangie and a cast of many. It's the Frangie Show, weekday afternoons at 3 o'clock right here on 1010XL. And the voice of your Jacksonville Jaguars on the flagship home of the Jags, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Thank you, Frank.
All right, fellas. Thank you.
There he goes. We'll talk to him later on in training camp, get more of his perspective as well. We'll come back on the other side, Tony. Hear a little bit about what Mark Lamping had to say yesterday in regards to the unveiling of the new U.S. Assure clubs. And also take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today, asking you, which player are you most interested in watching now that they're in full pads here and things get a little bit more physical at Jaguar training camp. We'll give you some of our candidates coming up next as well, too, and check in on the text line at 641-1010, driven by Duval Ford. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Today is the first day of full pads, and wide receiver Marquise Lee is out for the fourth straight practice with a hamstring injury. Two more opportunities this week to catch an open practice tomorrow and Wednesday, along with two next week, Monday and Tuesday next week. Grab your free ticket, jaguars.com/training camp practices. The big news yesterday was the unveiling of the U.S. Assured Club sections at the bank. Jaguars.com has all the video you need, and it's not surprising that President Mark Lamping says they are not done at looking to make improvements to the bank and the game day experience.
I don't think it should be finished. I know our fans' expectations don't stop. You know, they continue to evolve over time, and it's our responsibility to ensure that we are understanding their evolving needs and that we do everything we can to meet those.
This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Tyler Devitt.
I'm Dan Scuda of your Jacksonville Jaguars, and you're listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
That's right. Nice of you, Dan Scuda. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, final few minutes of Jaguars Today on this Tuesday. Full pads, Tony. And again, I haven't seen a whole lot of popping from our vantage point. I'm hoping, for the fans' sake, that when they get down to some team stuff, they're going to move over to the near practice field so folks can really take that in. I've always been amused. I know they want to rotate the fields and keep them fresh, but I would hope on the first day of full pads you get to see a little contact up close and personal.
I would hope so, yeah.
See how that goes. Let's hear a few thoughts from Mark Lamping yesterday, president of the Jags, before we get to the fan feedback spotlight. Today, Mark Lamping talking about the new U.S. Assure Clubs, which were unveiled, and marking that now $170 million in improvements have been put in the stadium since Shad Khan bought the team.
It's about $170 million that's been invested in reimagining Everbank Field. And, you know, I've always believed, and thankfully, you know, Shad agrees, that, you know, when you have an aging facility, it's even more important that you invest the money so that facility can evolve.
A facility not as aging anymore as it continues to evolve, much like the Jaguars roster. Mark Lamping said, you know, all that is nice, but winning still the number one priority.
This is not like the number one priority list for Shad or the organization. The number one priority is to win more football games. You know, that's the number one most important thing, the second most important thing, the third, the fourth, and the fifth. The adjustments that are being made to the stadium is still important.
And, you know, I just think it's one of those cases, Tony, where you can say, all right, we're going to do this to the stadium, and there's no question. It's like, hey, we're going to try to sign Malik Jackson. We don't know if we can get him. We're going to bring in a bunch of new guys on defense, but we don't know if they're all going to play well together. You know, when you lay out a vision and they've been able to check the boxes, that when you hear that talk in the offseason every year, this is what we'd like to see next, you have a pretty good idea that that's what's coming. And Mark Lamping says the Jags are not done in that department.
I don't think it should be finished. I know our fans' expectations don't stop. You know, they continue to evolve over time, and it's our responsibility to ensure that we are understanding their evolving needs and that we do everything we can to meet those.
All right, there you go, Mark Lamping, Jaguars president yesterday. And, again, go to Jaguars.com for all the video and still shots of what they look like now in the U.S. Assure Clubs, as I'm looking forward to going in and kind of touring them myself when we get back into our home away from home here at Everbank.
No doubt.
One on the text line here, because he's asked so nicely. In High Springs, he says, hey, guys, please throw out your thoughts. Wait for it. On the third or fourth tight ends that you see making the roster. No one has really talked about that, to my knowledge. Please, thank you, and love the show down here in High Springs. So, look, I think Nick Jacobs is on this football team, Tony, and then it comes down to that last spot if they're keeping four. And my guess would be Neil Sterling, if I had to guess right now, would be that guy. You know, you mentioned Ben Koyak had a really bad practice the other night. They're going to base it just on one. But I look at Brandon Bowman or Braden Bowman, and I just see a guy. You know what I mean? I don't see anything, any particularly exceptional traits. He's a decent all-around player. But if you're keeping four, I think Sterling and Jacobs are those third and fourth in whatever order you want to list them.
Yeah, since you got Mercedes and Julius Thomas there at the top, I think Nick Jacobs is the most reasonable direct backup to a guy like Mercedes if you consider him more your blocking tight end. Obviously, Mercedes can do a little bit of both, especially he can do a lot more of that receiving the ball than Nick Jacobs potentially could do. But I think that's important to keep a guy like Nick Jacobs on the roster as kind of a blocking tight end when you want to go to a big package. And beyond that, I'm intrigued by the athleticism of Neil Sterling more than I am any of the other guys, which is why I would agree with you. I kind of give him the leg up to be the fourth tight end right now, but I think it's pretty wide open as far as what they're going to be doing with that spot behind those top three.
All right, give me your three. We asked today for your one player, but give me three. Which Jaguar are you most looking forward to seeing at training camp now that they're practicing in full pads? Give me three guys.
Dante Fowler Jr. would be at or near the top of my list. Sheldon Day, because of just the conversation about him throughout the entire offseason, and Luke Jokel, is he more physical than he has been for the last couple of years? Does he play with that kind of chip on his shoulder and try to earn that spot there at left tackle? So those would be my top three among, I could probably list 20.
Right, and I'll give you three other. I'll give you Chris Ivory as a guy for obvious reasons with a physical style that when the pads are on, he's going to be able to shine a little bit more. Miles Jack, we talked about earlier in the program, and Jonathan Cyprian, too. Jonathan Cyprian, the party line is miscast, too much coverage, let him excel as a in-the-box safety, and I think he has a better chance to excel in that department. I've still seen way too many missed tackles in his short career. I've seen him get physically handled at times in his short career. This is a big training camp for Jonathan Cyprian. We're just assuming that he's going to be able to handle that role as the in-the-box safety. I think he's in the driver's seat compared to James Sample in the competition, but I think he needs to show up well over the course of the next 5 or 6 weeks to make sure he locks that down before the season starts. What do we get on Twitter on the fan feedback spotlight?
Here's what we got on Twitter from Irish Jaguar. I suppose Dante Fowler, but really, I want to see how the O-line and D-line as a whole matches up. From Union Jack's Joe, Malik Jackson, now is when we get an idea of whether he really wants to play for the full $90 million. From Ocho Fisho, our resident comedian, Brad Nortman. From Johnny, we got Miles Jack. From Cameron, Sheldon Day, curious to see if he is as fast as his pass rush tape looks like he is from Notre Dame. From Duval Doom, anyone not answering Dante is wrong. From Jay, we got Yannick Ngakoue, Chris Ivory, and Jalen Ramsey. And from Justin, I want to see that there quarterback. Really, though, I want to see the hit stick from Jack.
The hit stick.
The hit stick.
All right. Well, I got apparently a slew of wrong answers here on Facebook. Uh-oh. According to that one Twitter tweeter.
That would be Duval Doom.
Doom said that?
Yeah.
Well, it would just be like him to say that. Kevin said Jokel and Beecham. Curious to see if the signing has lit a fire under Luke and if Beecham is what he was before the injury. Garrett went with Ramsey. All the local media has been mentioning his aggressiveness. He wants to see it transfer to a padded practice. And honorable mention, O-line versus D-line. The big guys, Gregory got the answer right. He said it had to be Fowler. Crown Prince Doc said Jalen Ramsey. I want to see that transition live up to the hype. More from Fowler and Ngakoue getting some votes. Tashawn Gibson. To me, Gibson is not a guy I need to see with the pad. To me, Gibson's all about movement and coverage. And, when time comes, he's going to have to lay the hit on somebody this year. That is not the main thing I'm looking for out of Tashawn Gibson.
No. That would be, as you mentioned, a Cyprian thing. That strong safety spot, you know, Gibson.
Enforcer.
Gibson is the roamer there in the back of the defense that allows everything else to work in front of it. And that's already shown up here through the first 4 days of camp, whether the pads were on or not. It's really about the guys down in the trenches, the more physical positions that you look for a little bit more when the pads come on.
Do me a favor, will you? Because I need to leave after the show here today. I got a show now Tuesday afternoons on Sirius at 2 o'clock, so I need to scoot out of here. But when you see Daniel Patrick Hicken exit, will you tell him thanks for the W yesterday? Because, you know, no matter how bad the season gets, the Yankees – always kind of perk up when the Mets get on the schedule.
Oh, okay.
That's just how we roll, Tony. I know. You've shut it down.
Whatever.
Baseball season. All right. That's going to do it for us today. Nice lineup today for you, though. John Osier from Jaguars.com led things off. Mike Kay from First Coast News stopped by, as did Pete Prisco. And you just heard a few minutes ago from Frank Frangie, voice of your Jacksonville Jaguars, back out here tomorrow as we'll see what the storylines develop over the course of the remainder of this practice. Where are they going to today? 12:30, did I see?
Yeah, it's been 12:30 through the first couple days of camp.
So 12:30, and if you're planning on coming out in the next couple days, you'll see some popping, see some hitting, and then it'll all cap off with the scrimmage in Everbank on Friday night that we hope you plan on attending.
Guys, before we wrap up here, I got some breaking news for the Jags.
What do we got?
We got
Pokemon Safari 2 coming to Everbank Field.
Oh, good. Good.
It'll be on a game day when the Jags host the Ravens, September 25th. So yeah. you buy your ticket, you get a limited collectible Jaguars gym badge, all the Pokestops are there, some more rare Pokemon will be there. It's September 25th, and the announcement will be coming soon.
That's brilliant.
I said that's what they should do on any games where they're slow selling the tickets if they got so many people to show up. Now, of course, Tyler, you said it was very difficult to navigate when there are only 15 or 20,000 people showing up for that. I'm sure it'll be much easier on a game day with 65,000 plus in the stands. So,
if you'd like to find the flyer with all the information, Darren Rovell has actually tweeted it out about 10 minutes ago.
Oh, has he now? All right. We'll check that out. Pokemon Safari 2 coming soon to a stadium near you, a.k.a. Everbank. That'll do it for us today. Thanks to Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato. For Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. And for all our guests today, thanks to all of you out there in listener land as well. Back at it again tomorrow right here at Jaguar Training Camp. But get ready because the Midday Chalk is coming up in just a few minutes right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.